ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Canto 6, Chapter 16, entitled King Chitraketu Meets the Lord. And today we are going to study text number 5. Right? Bandhu Gyati. Okay.
Bandhu Gnatyari Madhyastha Mitro Dasina Vidvishaha Sarva eva hi sarvesham bhavanti kramashomithah bandhugnatari madhyastha mitrodasina vidvishah sarva eva hi sarvesham bhavanti kramashomithah Bandhugnatyari madhyastha Mitrodasina vidvishah Sarva eva hi sarvesham Bhavanti kramashomitha Bandhugnatyari madhyastha Mitrodasina vidvishaham Sarva eva hi sarvesham Bhavanti kramashomithaham Bandhugnyatyari madhyastham Mitrodasina vidvishaham Sarva eva hi sarvesham Bhavanti kramasho mithaham Bandhugyati ari madhyastha Mitrodasina vidvishah Sarva evahi sarvesham Bhavanti kramasho mithaham Bandhugyati ari madhyastha Mitro dasina vidvishaha Sarva eva hi sarvesham Bhavanti kramasho mithaha Bandhugnyatyari madhyastha Mitro dasina vidvishaha Sarva eva hi sarvesham Bhavanti krama shomithaha.
Ladies.
Bandhu gyatati madhyastha. Mitro dasine vidvishaha. Sarvehi sarvesham. Bhavanti krama shomithaha. Bandhu.
Friends. Jnati, family members. Ari, enemies. Madhyastha, neutrals. Mitra, well-wishers. Udasina, indifferent. Vidvisha, or envious persons. Sarve, all. Eva, indeed. He, certainly. Sarvesham, of all. Bhavanti, become. Kramasha, gradually. Mitha, of one another. In this material world, which advances like a river that carries away the living entity, all people become friends, relatives, and enemies in due course of time. They also act neutrally. They mediate. They despise one another. And they act in many other relationships. Nonetheless, despite these various transactions, no one is permanently related. Kindly repeat. In this material world, which advances like a river that carries away the living entity, all people become friends, relatives, and enemies in due course of time. They also act neutrally. They mediate. They despise one another. And they act in many other relationships. Nonetheless, despite these various transactions, no one is permanently related. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Savior of the entire world. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It is our practical experience in this material world that the same person who is one's friend today becomes one's enemy tomorrow. Our relationship as friends or enemies, family men or outsiders, are actually the results of our different dealings. Chitraketu Maharaj was lamenting for his son who was now dead. But he could have considered the situation otherwise. This living entity, he could have thought, was my enemy in my last life. And now, having appeared as my son, he is prematurely leaving just to give me pain and agony. Why should he not consider his dead son his former enemy? And instead of lamenting, be jubilant because of an enemy's death? As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 27. Prakratehe kriyamanani gunaihi karmani sarvashah. Factually, everything is happening because of our association with the modes of material nature. Therefore, one who is my friend today, in association with the mode of goodness, may be my enemy tomorrow, in association with the modes of passion and ignorance. As the modes of material nature work, in illusion, we accept others as friends, enemies, sons, or fathers in terms of the reactions of different dealings under different conditions. Om Agnana Timarantasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Mukam karoti vachalam pangam langhayate girim yat kripatam aham vande shri gurum dinataranam. Madeka bandho mat sangin mat guru man mahadhana man nistaraka mat bhagya man ananda namostate. Vande ham shri guroho shri utpadakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha. Shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunathan vitamtam sajivam. Sadvaitam savadhutam parijana sahitam. Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Bandhu Gnyati Ari Madhyastha Mitro Dasina Vidvishaha Sarva Eva Hi Sarvesham Bhavanti Kramasho Mithaha. In this material world, which advances like a river that carries away the living entity, all people become friends, relatives, and enemies in due course of time. They also act neutrally, they mediate, they despise one another, and they act in many other relationships. Nonetheless, despite these various transactions, no one is permanently related. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for the opportunity to say something about the Srimad Bhagavatam. By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and his pure representatives, it's a great fortune to be here in New Dwarka. It's not something to be taken for granted. Nothing is to be taken for granted. Any time we can lose anything we have, we always should be remain conscious of that. Here in this verse, Chitraketu Maharaj is unaware of the identity of his son from his previous life, and he has not yet become Vritrasura himself. The laws of karma are so complex and so difficult to understand. It's like a banyan tree we've mentioned before. Nobody can understand where it begins, where it ends. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and other commentators, this idea, which Srila Prabhupada is paraphrasing in his purport, that this son could have been an enemy from a previous life, Purva Janma Shatru. Sometimes, if we go to an astrologer to find out, why is this person giving me such pain? He'll tell you this. This person was actually your enemy in a previous life, and now he's come back. Actually, in the same passage of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in this same katha about King Chitraketu, there was a story like this, that he had given some problem to some small little insects in his previous life. And they're all coming back in the form of his many barren wives who could not give him a son. Think about this. We've mentioned already. How many wives did Chitraketu Maharaj have? 10 million. And every single one of them, think of the odds, every single one of them just happened to be barren and could not give him a son. When you're not meant to have something, you cannot get it by any means, even if you marry 10 million times. And even if you have the means to do that. So, his son was coming back, according to the acharyas writing on this verse, and he was telling him this. You don't realize that this time I've come as your son, but last time I was your enemy. According to Sridhar Swami, we heard yesterday, actually he was not quite, different acharyas say different things. Some of them say he was actually, he came back into the same body, which was activated with life again, and he spoke these words, and others say that it was a disembodied voice from within the sky, because he was in a ghostly form speaking the same thing. Either way, it amounts to the same thing, but here we learn that he was an enemy from a former life, and now he's come just to give me pain and agony. King Chitraketu could have thought this. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks, Yastu putra shadguno bhutva mriyate sa tu dukhadikya pradatvat shatrur eveti lokokti. People in general say that if one gets a good son who's qualified in every way, and then that son dies prematurely, then that person is, he's your enemy more than anyone who would give you pain in any other way. Isn't it? I know there was one couple. They had one son They were Bengalis also, so everybody knows. Prabhupada tells us, Bengali mothers are in a special category of mother. They love their sons more than other mothers, according to Srila Prabhupada. So they had an only son, and he was a star student. He was accomplished in every way. He was beloved, and he was a devotee. And one day he went to a rock concert. Anybody remember this group called The Cure? There was a group called The Cure. So he went to hear them. And he somehow or other, he got an asthma attack, and he died in that concert. And what to speak of his karma, we don't know, but the parents, it took them years to get over this. Years. Therefore, he says here, Satu dukadikya pradadvat shatrure veti. How could he be an enemy even worse than that? If you get a nice son and he's gone. Or sometimes people have sons and then they turn rotten also. Not exactly what we planned. One thing that we can learn if we stay in this mature world for some time, and we don't know that that's guaranteed either, but one thing we can learn through experience is that you always know that it's going to be different than you expect, even though you don't know how it's going to turn out. But it will always be different than you expect. Almost always you can say this. So, now, in this fabulous purport, in this wonderful tour de force, Srila Prabhupada concludes with a couple of very heavy statements. They're made very innocuously, and it's a very short, unassuming sort of a purport, but so deep. He says, therefore, one who is my friend today in association with the mode of goodness may be my enemy tomorrow in association with the modes of passion and ignorance. There are three modes, as we know. They're called Shanta, Ghora, and Murha in the third canto. That means when we are peaceful, well, put it this way, when we are aware, when we're full in knowledge, then naturally the result is that we're peaceful, everything's okay. And the insidious nature of that influence is that we become complacent and a little proud, and that precedeth the fall, as we know. And where do we go when we fall? We go into Ghora Rupa. We go into the mode of passion, where everything is activated by intense ambition and desires and attachments. And then we suffer, because that's the natural result of this mode of passion. And then if we suffer enough, and if we get bewildered by our passions, enough to commit a certain critical mass, if you will, of sinful activities, then what happens next? We go even further down into the murha realm. Just complete bewilderment. We don't know what's going on. We're completely confused, like an animal. That's mode of tamoguna. So all of us are being impelled only by the modes of material nature. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, well, Srila Prabhupada quotes here, Prakriti kriyamanani gunai kramani sarvashaha. Everything is being actually carried out by the influence of these modes of nature. Think about it. Why do we act in a certain way? Everyone's activities, every little thing we do is motivated by some sort of desire. Some sort of kama. Kama means desire. And what is pushing those desires? What's creating what we desire? Where does it come from? Who knows? According to what Krishna says in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, where does desire come from? Okay. Yeah, keep going. The one line I'm thinking of, kama. Sangat sanjayate. Kama. The desire comes from the sangha, what you're associated with. We are all associating with the modes of material nature, this passion, ignorance, goodness. We're all associating with these modes, and these modes are impelling all of our activities. But ahankara vimudhatma. Vimudhatma. It's one thing to be mudhatma. What does mudha mean? We've described already. Like an animal. The other day we heard someone who thinks that this body is the self and cannot get out of this concept, that person is really no better than an animal. And when one is, when we hear these things and we know these things and we may even preach these things and we still think like an animal, then we're called vimudha, vimudhatma, particularly an animal, a deluxe edition of the animal, vishesh mudha. So, kartaham iti manyate, Krishna says, he thinks that I am doing this. We think that this present body is us. We think it's the self. And we think that I have, and it's guaranteed, and it's going to be there when I wake up tomorrow, a certain degree of intelligence. Or money. Or friends. Think about it. You can have anything in this world that you want from now on, from this moment on, but you can't have any friends. How would you feel? Or everything's fine in your life, but no money. Or everything is okay, all facility is there, everything's smooth sailing, but you've got no intelligence. Or no eyesight. Huh? Or you lose a hand. Or you've got AIDS. Or you're so many things. These are the things that happen. And on the basis of these reactions, we react. Kartaham iti manyate, thinking that I'm the doer. Even though we're being impelled by the pushings and the pullings of these modes of material nature, then we commit a particular activity and we're locked in to the next cycle, and who knows? The person that we screwed in this life is going to come back and make sure that we get it back in another life, in another form, and we don't know how and we can't even identify it when it happens. We're so vimudha. We're so unaware. Even it's happening to us, we can't understand it. It's like they have this saying, he's so dense that he can't understand that the train is coming until he's flat underneath it looking up. Now, some of us are so dense that even we're flat underneath it looking up and we still don't know it's a train. That's vimudha, vimudhatma. So human form of life is an opportunity to try to cultivate this knowledge in good association, because it's that association that develops our desires. If we associate with tamoguna, then we become a mudha. If we associate with rajoguna, then we become ghora. What does ghora mean? Horrible, actually. It means pungent, excessive, intense. And if we associate with a mode of goodness, then we become shanta, peaceful. Urvam gacchanti sattvastha madhetishtanti rajasaha jaghaniya guna vrittistho what's the next line? Atho gacchanti tamasaha. So those in the mode of ignorance go down, those in the mode of passion go sideways, and those in the mode of goodness, they go up. So everything is based on the modes of material nature, and Prabhupada concludes their last sentence, as the modes of material nature work, in illusion, we accept others as friends, enemies, sons, or fathers in terms of the reactions of different dealings under different conditions. What are those different dealings and different conditions? They are the different actions that we have performed, impelled by the modes of material nature in the past life, in this life, and in the future life. But here's the point, according to Viraragavacharya, Sarva eva hi sarvesham, he says, glossing this passage, he says, sarve jivaha and sarvesham jivanam. That is to say, what is all this? All become the friends and the enemies and et cetera, of all others in due course of time. He's talking about the jivas. Every single jiva will become all of these categories of every other jiva. All you need is the scope of eternal time beyond our comprehension, and it's guaranteed. That is something very deep. Pavanti kramasho. Gradually, it's just a matter of time before they become so. So what are these categories? Bandhu, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says, this is somebody who vivahadi sambandhi, who has become a relative through marriage or other sorts of social intercourse. That's bandhu. Or a friend, generally the term is taken. But since Mitra is mentioned in the second line, we don't need to interpret Bandhu as friend. We can take it as relative. It's also the meaning of the word. Jnati. Now, Jnati, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur defines as someone who is sapinda. What does sapinda mean? Anybody know? I doubt it, because we don't care about these things anymore. According to karma kanda system, or dharma, sadhana dharma, ordinary dharma, when we have a father, we are obligated to perform the shraddha ceremony for that father in order to release him from any sinful reactions that he may get, which may lead him into a ghostly species. In the shraddha ceremony, we offer a certain sort of prasadam, which is called pinda. So a sapinda is a particular type of relative who is authorized to offer this. Particularly, it's the son and the grandson and the great-grandson. It goes six generations, including three before and three backward. That defines the sapinda relationship. So, and through the daughters also it goes, through the daughter, and then to the daughter's son, and then to the daughter's grandson. It's patrilineal. But this is a sapinda, and jnati, which is mentioned here, somebody who is a relative, in a general sense, we can say. But we really don't have a technical sense of what it means to be a relative because, as I said, nobody does these things anymore. They don't care. They don't have time, they don't have faith, or they're just too distracted by passion and ignorance. So that's sapinda, a relative. And then ari. Anybody know what ari means? Enemy. Ghataka, somebody who is going to kill you or somebody who's going to attack you. And then mitra. Mitra means what? Right, like bandhu, except mitra is somebody who is ordinary friend. There are different levels of friends. There's mitra, there's suhrit, he's the closest friend. Suhrit is he's somebody who's looking out for your welfare, but Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he seems to define this mitra here as a suhrit mitra. Suhrin mitradi udasina, as we've heard elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita. So hiteshi, somebody who is thinking of your welfare, is called your hiteshi, somebody who desires your welfare. And according to Virayagavacharya, he says mitra means somebody who protects you when you need protection, rakshaka, that's a friend. Sometimes we find, quite often we find in this material world, that when we need somebody, when we need protection, all of our friends scatter, isn't it? Who do we learn this from in the eighth canto? Anybody know? Visrishta viklishta samasta bandhu, Bilva Mangala Thakur says. When Gajendra found himself attacked on the leg by this crocodile who clamped down and locked on and started shaking vigorously and would not let go, and he couldn't do anything about it. He tried to get rid of this alligator. Nothing worked. And all of his friends saw the blood in the water, and that's going to attract all the other alligator's friends, right? And they split. We're out of here. Supposed bandhus, samasta bandhu. Supposed friends, supposed well-wishers. So here he says mitra, or a real friend, means rakshaka, somebody who is going to be there when you need them. And madhyastha. Madhyastha means situated in the middle. That is to say, he's neither friendly nor is he an enemy, as Prabhupada translates here. Neutrals. Udasi. What is udasi? This is a word that comes quite a few times in Bhagavad Gita. Anybody know? Huh? Yeah, nowadays in Hindi it means depressed or, you know, a little bit aloof maybe. But in Bhagavad Gita, the word is used by Lord Krishna in chapter 12, text number 16. And there, Baladev Dabhushan defines udasi. He doesn't take any sides. Na paripakshi. He doesn't take any sides. Sometimes we see, quite often we see in this world, there are different factions, right? And you have to take sides. Otherwise, somebody's expectations are not going to be fulfilled. And you know what happens in that case. So the devotee tries to avoid that as much as possible. In other words, he's not a politician. He doesn't like to politic. He doesn't like to take sides. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur sees it a little bit differently. He says it means he's detached from ordinary people. Because we know, ordinary people, especially nowadays, they tend to be chandalas. They're not going to help us advance, either materially or spiritually. So it's not a bad idea to be a little bit detached, in that sense, aloof. So this is Udasi. And as Prabhupada says here, what does it mean? Indifferent. So then we have Vidvir. What does Vidvir mean? Vidvisha? Envious. Somebody is envious. And we've already seen that, haven't we? That's why this boy is dead, isn't it? All the queen, 10 million women who could not have sons, and then finally there's this male son who's very important for a king. He wants to have successors to continue the lineage. Imagine what these women were thinking. So they've killed him. They were actually so much impelled by their passion and their attachment that they poisoned this boy. Nunam pramatta kurate vikarma. That's what happens. By associating with these lower modes, we become impelled to commit injudicious activities that will come back and bite us at a certain point in the future. Of course, we heard yesterday, they eventually performed some atonement, so hopefully they didn't have to worry about that. But anyway, so he's defining, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur defines Vidvirt, the person who's envious, Utkarshasahi. Utkarsha. Utkarsha means when somebody else rises to prominence. We can't stand it to see someone else shine. That's called envy. This is exactly the same definition that was given in the first canto by Sridhar Swami when commenting on the Kaitava Dharma verse. Dharma prochita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. Nirmatsara, somebody who is not envious, he says. Envy means that utkarshasaha sahana. You cannot tolerate to see someone else doing well. That's envy. So this is, and then finally we have here, what is it? Yeah, that's it. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 categories of relationships, and we are going to be in every single one of these with every single living entity in this creation. At least that's what I'm reading here. If we stick around long enough. It's just a question of time. Sometimes you go to these Nadi readers in South India, and it's described that Agastya Muni has a whole record of all the living entities in the creation, because one day Parvati, he went to Parvati and he said, I want to know all about all of your children. And she said, well, all of my children, they're all the living beings that exist in this material universe. And she gave him all that information, believe it or not, past lives, present lives, future lives. And you go then, and they take your thumbprint, and that's all. And on the basis of that, they find out who you were and who you're going to be and what you are. And they can tell you some pretty astonishing things even about your present life that nobody but you knows. They can do this. I've had experience. So anyway, the point is that in due course of time, every one of us is going from one relation to another relation to another relation. And it's really meaningless. Because the very person that for whom we're ready to kill now in this life, that person may be our enemy next time, or may have been our enemy in the past. And who's the loser? We are. Therefore, in Ramayana, when he was chanting Mara, 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 right? Narada Muni came and said to Valmiki that, listen, you know, why are you killing all these living beings? Why are you killing? And he said, well, I've got to support my family. And he said, well, listen, why don't you go home and ask your family members, will you please accept all the results of my karma, all the sinful things I'm doing in order to maintain you? Will you please? I think somebody sent one of these things out on Facebook. Maybe it was Dina Buntu or somebody. The man had 4 wives, and one of them was asked, are you willing to exchange for me? No way! They all answered, you see. So that's love in the material world. In fact, Shankaracharya says that a man cannot even rest confidently that his own son will not kill him if he has enough. And if we look at Indian history, at least, there's practically no single king in the history of India, Hindu, Muslim, makes no difference, who didn't ascend to the throne by killing either his siblings or his father. And then, what happens when you get old? Pascha jivati jarjara dehe vartam kopi na prichati gehe. In your own home, nobody cares to ask, how are you doing? Do you have enough? Is everything all right? Can I do something for you? They don't care. They don't have time, especially here in the Western world, and now the Indians are learning the same thing because they're so faithful. So, unless it's something has the imprimatur of the United States of America, the Indian will not do it. This has been my observation. As having lived there, I know. It has to be authorized and then by the Americans, and they'll do it. That was Srila Prabhupada's logic in coming to the United States and preaching Krishna consciousness here. And he was right. So now what we do is we take our elders and we put them into nursing homes, and then we go off and pursue our wild dreams at great expense and usually through sinful actions. Prabhupada said this whole civilization is thriving on misdeeds only. Thriving on misdeeds only. Vikarma. So, but it always comes back. It always comes back. And these are a few things we can think about here. Ultimately, these relationships are meaningless. The real thing is to cultivate the eternal relationship with Krishna, and then all other relationships relative to that, they get their meaning. And that meaning is eternal, and it doesn't disappear. Until we are fully plugged into that spiritual platform, we must be aware that some of our dealings are eternal, as devotees at least, mixed devotees. Some of our dealings are eternal, some of our relations are eternal, and others are not. And for those that are not, we can think about this as well. Think of the ramifications. The person who's your friend now may become your enemy later, and et cetera, et cetera. I'll stop here. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, Uttama Shloka Prabhu.
Thank you. I was just wondering, when you were describing these different categories, that Madhyastha and Udasin, they seem to be very similar,
yeah,
almost the same. What would be the difference between Madhyastha and Udasina?
That's a very good question. Let's look first at the way that Srila Prabhupada has glossed these words. Madhyastha, as I said, he means neutrals, and Udasina means indifferent. You know, in the 10th canto, when the Govardhan Leela is going on and Krishna's asking his father that you don't keep secrets from family members, he mentions that a neutral person may also be your enemy. In that a person who's neutral, he may sometimes side with your enemy. And if someone sides with your enemy, then he's also going to function as your enemy. So it's a subtle distinction, it seems. And of course, it's going to be contextually determined as well. But Madhyastha, which Srila Prabhupada, well, or Udasina, which Srila Prabhupada means indifferent, it's a little different in that sense. Because Udasi, we learned from the other acharyas, he doesn't want to take any sides. He won't side with your enemy. So you're asking about, and Ari and Vidvisha, is there a distinction between those two? Ari is somebody who attacks, according to this commentary, and Vidvisha is somebody who may be envious. He's unable to tolerate your opulence, but at least he's not going to attack you. Is that okay? At least that's what I can say based on what I've read. Yes.
Thank you for your lecture. It's very inspiring. My question is, in Krishna consciousness, one of the goals is to transcend the three modes of nature.
Yeah.
So why do we want to transcend the mode of goodness? And what is the symptom of a person who has transcended three modes of material nature?
Prakasham cha pravrittim cha moham eva cha pandava na dveshti sampravrittani na nivrittani kangshiti udasina vad asino gunair yo na vichalyate gunavartanta iti evam yo vitishtati na ingate samadukha sukha swastha samaloshtashma kanchanah tulya priyapriyo dhiras tulya nindatma samstutihi mana apamana yos tulyas tulyo mitrari pakshayoho sarvarambha parityagi gunatitah sa uchyate. In chapter 14, texts 22 through 25 of the Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion, that is to say, goodness, passion, and ignorance, when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. And then he goes on to say, Mamcha Yovya Bhicharina, many of us know this verse, one who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature, and thus comes to the level of Brahman. So why do we want to get out of even material goodness? Because if we've read chapter 14, which is entitled The Modes of Material Nature of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes there that none of these modes is eternal. They're all fighting constantly for supremacy. Sometimes goodness conquers passion and ignorance. Sometimes passion establishes itself over goodness and ignorance. Sometimes ignorance establishes itself over goodness and passion. But none of them is eternal. And it's just a matter of time before, in this material consciousness, before ignorance or passion get the better of us. As long as we retain any attachment to an identity other than Krishna's servant. So we have the idea of pure goodness. That is to say, goodness which does not, give way to any other mode. And the idea here is, as we read here, to come to the level of Brahman realization, spiritual realization. That is the substrate of devotional service. That's the foundation on which we can actually execute this pure devotional service, or as Prabhupada calls it here, full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances. Only when we are liberated completely from these influences, even of goodness, can we actually act on the spiritual platform, which is of the nature of pure goodness. And he says, Brahma-bhuta prasannatma na shochati na kankshati samasarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. That symptom of that goodness is that you don't get bewildered by these relationships like the seven that we've mentioned today. Instead, you retain your understanding of your spiritual nature and your identity as pure spirit. And in that condition of liberation, Krishna says, then you can really practice mature and sustainable pure devotion. Until that time, we're practicing, and sometimes we do well and sometimes we don't do well. So it's the difference between doing pretty good and doing perfectly, in a nutshell. Is that okay? Yes.
Thank you so much for your white consciousness. I have questions about envy. So I heard that we have to avoid envious people. So that means everyone is envious here. We should avoid each other.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, certainly you can avoid persons in whom you perceive this envy. Persons in whom you perceive this intolerance of your whatever opulences you have. Certainly that person you should avoid. But in general, in an absolute sense, everyone in this world is envious. And therefore, he says, udasi, for a devotee, Krishna says these are the qualities that endear a devotee to him. One of them is to be udasi, to be detached from ordinary people because they're all envious. We should become attached only to devotees because devotees at least are trying to cultivate freedom from envy. Devotees are at least trying to surrender to Krishna. And many of them are very well advanced in that path, and we can learn from them. Is that okay? That's right. Yeah, so, you don't have to accept association according to your karma, but your karma may predispose you to do that. And that's the austerity of bad karma. So therefore, Krishna says in the end of chapter 7, it's better to be situated as much in relative piety as you possibly can, because that will allow you to sustain a mature commitment to pure devotional service. But the more we have these reactions from the realms of the ghora and mudha activities, or the modes of passion and ignorance, the more difficult it will be for us to actually maintain pure devotional service and to accept good association and to not receive bad association. If someone has what? If someone has no family, no friends, and no children, then that person has no enemy. That's true. That person also has a very artificial life because he has no social life at all. And that's also, you can read that as a karmic reaction. So, Banabhakta Prabhu.
I'm wondering then, what is the responsibility of, say, the son for his father, specifically one who's a devotee? We know that verse, Krishna says that one who is completely surrendered to him, he is not obligated to the demigods and to forefathers and like that. Yeah. But, you know, what level actually is that? And what is our responsibility in terms of where we may be?
Yeah. Well, what is the obligation of a son to his father? Are you asking that specifically? Or what is the obligation of a... And maybe you can restate your question simply.
The obligation specifically, I mean, obviously when we're born in this world, we're given so many different things. We're obligated to so many different people, specifically our parents. So in context with what you were saying about offering pinda to one's father so we can release him from hell, taking that example, what would be our responsibility, if any, towards our father outside the purview of just executing our own duties within Krishna consciousness?
Well, yeah, I think we have duties within Krishna consciousness. And one of those duties, it depends, you see. Like I said, if we're practicing mixed devotional service, then we are receiving karmic reactions for the obligations that we do not fulfill. That's something to think about, because in Chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita and more explicitly in Canto 11 of the